And this is still WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Programming note, the WBAI Evening News will return tomorrow at 6 p.m. Counterspin will return at its regular time next Monday at 6:30 p.m. It is now 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg coming up at 7 p.m.
Later in the program, the new leadership of the powerful Teamsters Union says they'll dare to struggle and dare to win against the bosses warring on the workers.
But first, Kate Hillo, chair of Kentuckians for Single-Payer Healthcare, says we had better wake up quickly, as clearly Congress is asleep at the switch as Biden continues Trump-era ploy to privatize Medicare and Medicaid services. Kate Callow, thank you for being the town crier for people's accessibility, affordability to health services. There are a lot of people who don't understand what Medicare and Medicaid are to the populace. Why don't we begin by that as an issue, and then we'll move into issues about privatization and so on.
Medicare and Medicaid both were passed in 1965. Medicare is the program that people become eligible for when they turn 65. So it's basically a seniors program, although it does now include those permanently and totally disabled and people with end-stage kidney disease. Basically the seniors program, and I think there's something like about 60 million people on it. It is publicly funded. Everybody pays a little bit in their paycheck to fund that. It's a program that has worked very well. It runs on about 2% overhead. Medicaid covers those who of low income or those with disabilities, and it's a state and federal combination of funding. It's a means-tested program. Medicare is much the better program, although Medicaid, it's been a stopgap for many, many people. It pays very low rates to hospitals and to physicians, which means it's a lower tier of coverage, so the people on it don't get as good, and it's something that we should change to where everybody is on the same level, and all of us are in a national improved Medicare for All, a national single-payer plan without the barriers to care.
The Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services Innovation Center announced that by 2030 they will move to an all-traditional Medicare enrollees into a care relationship with a third-party middleman. It's called the Direct Contacting DC program. Talk about that, please.
This is a terrible thing. It is not getting any news coverage. People don't know about it. This program, Direct Contracting in Medicare, aligns people who are Medicare beneficiaries into a direct contracting entity, which then changes the basis of the payment for their care, moves it away from fee-for-service, and moves it into capitation. It changes the incentive for their care from a situation in which those entities get more money if there's less care. These for-profit entities are venture capitalists, private equity, insurance companies. One of them is Humana Direct Contracting. There are 53 of them now operating in 38 states. That program puts people into them without their consent. It is the people who didn't choose to go to private Medicare Advantage, the people who chose to stay in original Medicare, the public plan, are being put without their consent into these direct contracting entities. It will indeed privatize all of Medicare if it's allowed to continue. It's a crisis for us, and it's not even known. Nobody's talking about it.
We've been acculturated to believe that the private sector handles things much better than government. So that's in part how this is being sold. So tell us about capitation, that whole concept of the privatization of healthcare, of these programs, Medicare and Medicaid.
The thinking within this Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, and this Innovation Center was written into the law, the Affordable Care Act. So it is supposed to, under the language of the law, improve quality or keep quality the same and cut the costs. And the thinking within that department is to cut costs, we have to cut care. People are getting too much treatment. They go to the doctor too much. They go to the hospital too much. So we're going to cut that back by paying in a different way, by doing away with fee-for-service, which is you see the doctor, the physician gets paid, you go to the hospital gets paid. This says we're going to instead give this direct contracting entity a lump sum per year, and that lump sum they will give the care. That's called capitation. It changes the incentive entirely. So now your physician will be pressured not to order that test or not to order more physical therapy or not to put you into the hospital or to shorten the hospital stay. All of those things are insurance company thinking, because they see care as eating into their profits. This Innovation Center is trying to put all of Medicare into this situation where there is no more fee-for-service and where there is complete control by those who use health care as a profit maker. It's an extremely dire situation because the Innovation Center, CMS, that's the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the agency of the government that controls this, they have the ability to implement these models directly without congressional approval. If this continues to go on, they can put everybody in Medicare into these for-profit entities, which is going to be a whirlwind of profit for them. Going big on Wall Street now, there is silence from our Congress, from Xavier Becerra, the head of Health and Human Services. It's happening now, so that's why those of us who have come to know about it are working to sound the alarm and to say we have to speak up or we're going to lose our Medicare as a public program. It's going to be completely privatized.
In addition to that, doesn't it also exaggerate the cost of the diagnoses and bill the government more than they should?
You are right. In addition to making the money through the capitation, they have this other thing that they do. That's what's been going on within the privatized Medicare Advantage plans. They get more of that per member per month money if they say this particular person has more illnesses, needs more care because they've got lots of problems. So all of these insurance companies and other companies have come up with algorithms to tell them how to do something called upcoding. they say, well, this person doesn't just have diabetes, they have just a terrible form of diabetes, and they don't just have COPD, they have shortness of breath and all kinds of other things on it. In other words, if they can get the physician to put more codes in, they can raise the amount of money that they get per member per month. And that's been happening in Medicare Advantage. They're being overpaid by the billions now, and that's what will also happen within the DCEs. They're going to do this upcoding. One of the problems is that more and more of our physician practices are owned by private equity. We don't even have the doctor making this decision, but we have a push to turn that into an upcoding that will change the money. I've seen an example. Medicare Advantage or direct contractor might get $9,000 per year for a healthy senior. But if they can put in lots and lots of codes to say this person is sicker than they really are, they could get $32,000 a year. It's extremely lucrative, and there's no oversight to make sure that that is not done in a way that indeed engenders the profit. And in fact, the whole scheme looks to be geared to benefit the insurance industry and to bring into it these Wall Street hedge funds and venture capitalists who will be taking over and running it. Their thinking is that these are the people who will better control the costs, and that's how we're going to bring the costs down. The theory that our costs are due to too much care, just absolutely wrong. There is no evidence for that at all. In fact, we have more cases where we're not getting enough care. Compare, for instance, the number of visits to a physician annually or the number of days in a hospital. Our country is way below other industrialized countries. We have something like 4 average visits to physician per year. Japan has something like 12, and they pay much less. So it's not that our people are getting too much care. So the diagnosis on which this innovation center is proceeding is absolutely wrong. They are proceeding to try to do away with fee-for-service, to bring in the profit makers, which they see as the ones who will lower the costs. It hasn't been working. The Medicare Advantage plans, which are the other privatized part, which represents about 42% of people in Medicare, those plans don't save money. They cost us more than traditional Medicare. So not only do we get less care, we're paying more for it. And it really has to be exposed.
You're doing just that. It's like a perverse medical pyramid scheme. The politics of this started before in many, but certainly the Trump administration was going in this direction. And what are the politics of the Biden administration? It's why are they supporting it? And whom do we need to tackle in the congressional sector to say, hell no, stop messing with life-saving services, and what we really need is Medicare for all? How are we to understand?
So it was started before. It was started by the Trump administration, but it has proceeded under the Biden administration. The direct contracting program actually began in April of 21, so that's under Biden, and then Biden is the one who appointed Elizabeth Fowler to head this innovation center. I can't tell you why he thinks what he thinks. There is tremendous pressure from the industry that profits from this on all politicians, and they need to get some backbone and stand up to it. You know, it's shocking to see how many have gone along with the Medicare Advantage. No one is screaming about that in the Congress. In 2020, there were 403 in Congress who signed a letter organized by AHIP, that's American Health Insurance Plans, And they got 403 in the Congress between the House and the Senate to say, we love Medicare Advantage, don't cut Medicare Advantage, protect Medicare Advantage. And that's the privatized program, and many of the progressives signed on to that. So people have to begin pushing in another direction. So there is no way to solve the health care crisis without removing the profit-making insurance industry. Now, in our country, we spend $1,000 per person per year for health care, which is about double what other industrialized countries spend, and they have better outcomes. We have a climbing mortality rate. Life expectancy is going down in our country. That's a disaster. We really have to take the private profit makers out of our health care and set up a system that will be publicly run, where we democratically make the decisions on it, and where we remove the barriers to care. The money that people have to pay in deductibles and copays and in premiums per month, all of those things. I mean, even Medicare, which is our best program, and we're fighting to save it, but it's not good enough. It's too expensive. It costs so much to purchase a Medigap plan to pay for what it doesn't cover. And it doesn't cover nursing homes, eyeglasses, and hearing aids. It doesn't cover the drugs. People are paying a fortune for the drugs. So even our best plan is not good enough. We need national single payer with no barriers to care. That's the problem, and we have to begin to stand up for it. You know, how come the rest of the world can do this and we can't? How come our country has to have a collapsed and broken healthcare system?
Well, you've been organizing to that extent in Kentucky, and there have been demonstrations in Washington. But what can people throughout the country do? Who do they contact? Do they contact Physicians for a National Health Program or other organizations? How do people become involved?
Okay. Also, if you can tell us about just within that, the particular work that's happening in Kentucky to mobilize around this.
Yeah, well, we're going after them. Here we are. Kentuckians for Single-Payer Healthcare is a long-time organization. We've been around since 2004 fighting for this. We think the majority of the people in Kentucky want national single-payers. We are having a demonstration on Saturday, December 11, at the Humana Building. That's a big marble mausoleum downtown. And they are one of the direct contractors. They're ones that make most of their money comes from public funds that goes through their hands before it goes into care. So we're going to be there. We're going to have a program called How the Grinch Stole Medicare. We have a poem about that that speaks about the direct contracting entities. And we have some singers and we have musicians, and we're going to gather there urging the public to find out about it, then contact Xavier Becerra. The Twitter is at SECBECERRA, and tell him to stop the direct contracting in Medicare. And then people should be contacting as well their congressperson, their two senators, their House member. Ask them to stop it. You know, there were, I have to give credit where it's due, there were four congresspersons who wrote a letter to Becerra expressing great concern about the direct contracting and urging that the program be frozen because people were being put into it without their consent and because billions are being spent that are unnecessary and being cheated, and that there's no oversight to make sure that people get care. And those four in Congress were Katie Porter, Mark Pocan, Doggett, and Pascrell from New Jersey. They wrote a letter, I think, last May. We had a webinar organized by Physicians for a National Health Program that took place about this in September, and Katie Porter spoke on that, and as of September, there was no answer to that letter that was sounding the alarm. Where is Becerra? What does he say? Why is there no answer to what is going on? Is no one willing to respond to the public concern about this? So I say, talk to your congressperson and demand that they first learn about it, and then they act to ask that it be stopped. And the person who can stop it is Becerra, because he is over the CMS, the Center for Medicare Services. Of course, Biden could stop it too, so it's good to give Biden a call as well. That would be a good thing, to call Biden, call Becerra, call your senators and congresspersons, and let your neighbors know, because most people don't know about this. You know, share the word. If you go to pnhp.org, you can find out more about it, and there's a group called National Single Payer. They have information on it. KYHealthcare.org, we have information and links to the what's going on with the DCE. So we have to just sound the alarm. We get out in the streets with bells and whistles and say to people, they're stealing Medicare. That's why we got how the Grinch stole Medicare, because they truly are stealing this wonderful public program that has to be the basis of the kind of plan we need to cover all of our people and to get universal care.
It is good that you are on the case until we get a Medicare for all universal health system, which we certainly understand and believe to be a human right. Kay Attillo, once more, give us your website so people can get all of this valuable information to arm themselves to respond to this most aggressive threat against our health care.
Yes, it's kyhealthcare.org. The information about our Grinch activity is on there, and you can sign a petition against the direct contracting, and there's much more there. And we appreciate if others will pick up and spread it around, use social media, talk to your friends, spend some time letting people know, because it's an uninformed public is the reason why people haven't taken it on, because if people know about it, they will rise up and fight to save Medicare. We've seen that happen in our country, and we have to make it happen again.
It's Kay Attillo, Chair of Kentuckians with Single Payer Healthcare. Thanks for the wake-up call to get involved in fighting against the privatization of Medicare and Medicaid, our health care for their profits.
What's going on? There's a war zone here today out in the heartland, but the union's here to stay. Those multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true, but they declared a war on us right now, and by God it's up to you, cause there's a war on the workers. There's a war on the workers.
As Eddie Starr says, there's a war on the workers.
Now, a celebratory moment as the powerful Teamsters Union prepares to usher in a new era of union democracy for the rank-and-file members and says it's prepared to struggle and win against the boss's war on the workers.
Celebrating the Teamsters United victory, we'll hear from Fred Zuckerman, newly elected Teamsters Vice President. And then we'll speak with the legendary Ken Paff, Teamsters for a Democratic Union National Organizer, and Antoine Andrews, lead shop steward from Teamsters Local 804, representing the UPS workers.
Teamsters, dare to struggle and dare to win. Watch out, Jeff Bezos. I think you've met your match.
My name is Antoine Andrew, 25-year veteran of Kingston Local 804, which I'm greatly proud of. I want to kick off this event by making a special acknowledgement because of TDU's, the I-Slate, latest victory. I want to recognize Vinnie Perrone, Ken Pack, Fred Zuckerman, who else am I forgetting, Dave Levine, and every individual who got the members out to vote, and every member that voted. I want everybody to know that that was a great victory, and we will not be broken. We stand for one. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our next speaker is a true leader, standing up for the membership, dedicating his personal time to fight for the membership. So I want to introduce Mr. Fred Zuckerman.
I'm getting aware we can wind down a little bit. We've been through a campaign that seems like it's been going on for 12 years. At least I've been doing it for 12 years. And we've won some, we've lost some, but this campaign, we won. It was enormous by the vote count that came out and the margins that we won by. And nobody has ever seen that before. And it's because we all came together. 12 years ago, 10 years ago when I ran, we were kind of fractured. We didn't have anything going. We didn't have coalitions going. So it was a little bit more difficult. We got our butts kicked pretty good. But we all knew that things needed to change. And 5 years ago, or 6 years ago, we formed a coalition. We formed a coalition with TDU. We formed a coalition with other folks. And we came within 6,000 votes of winning. Now, we didn't have a lot going for us, right? We didn't have the money that we had this time. We didn't have the staff that we had this time. We didn't have the support of the members that we had this time. We didn't have a lot of those things that just seemed to coalesce into this campaign, and that's what gave us the win. Now, I appreciate Ken, David, all the TDU folks that have supported this same vision that we've had for a long time to accomplish this. We could have went in different directions, but we knew from our past that that wasn't the right thing to do, that we need to figure out how to win. And there's always ways to win. You just got to figure out how to get there. Now, it may not be perfect, but I think that we can make it perfect. We know what the members want. They're the ones that sent us here. We know what they want. They've told everybody that they want a more militant union, that they want aggressiveness with the employers, that they want somebody to stand with them when they fight back against the employers. One of the things that's happening right now in America, and you all see it, is that employees are standing up for themselves. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it in big numbers. They have strikes. They got strikes at Nabisco. They ain't taking it no more. They had strikes at John Deere. They ain't taking it no more. All over America, people are finally standing up to get what they want. They're finally growing the set. And you know what? They should have done that a long time. But what's exciting about where we're at right now is that we are coming right behind them on this, and as long as they continue to be militant and aggressive with their jobs, with their employers, we're going to be helping them do that. And that's an exciting thing. I am very excited about our future. As long as we believe that we can make things better, as long as we do the right things, as long as in our hearts that we're not going to cower down to employers, that we're going to fight every step of the way to make things better, to make a better life or the people that we represent out there, we're going to be successful. I think they're at a point where they're going to support us, and I know that we're at a point where we're going to support them. So I thank everybody for allowing me to talk for a couple minutes. I certainly want to thank these guys because we have accomplished what we've been trying to do for a very long time, and we're going to have a hell of a time finishing this job off.
So Fred said two words that stuck out of my head, accomplishment and success. So my next speaker has certainly accomplished these things, accomplishment and succeeded. And he played a significant role in building this union. Ken Pack.
Thanks, Antoine. Thanks to, it's an honor to follow Vinny and Fred, some of the new leaders of the Teamsters Union. Fred's going to be the number two officer in this union. Going to be taking office in a few months. And as he said, the job has just begun. And it has been a long time coming, Fred mentioned. He's been doing it for 12 years, Vinny's been doing it about the same, and not to brag, but I've been doing it longer. It's a long struggle. It's a marathon. I want to thank also Sister Michelle from the New York State Nurses Association. We're about solidarity. We don't think the Teamsters are going to do it on our own. We don't think any union is going to do it on our own. We're going to do it with other unions, other movements, other communities, right, uniting together to win. And we learn from you, and we appreciate your support, and we want to give you our support. Incidentally, speaking of support, someone told me the other day, you know, now that you're a winner, you'll have a lot of new friends. But the people in this room, you've been friends, you've been supporting, organizing in this movement when there's victories and defeats over the long haul. You're not the ones that just show up to see, oh, well, you're the winner, I better get on your team. And we appreciate that. We appreciate that. That's what solidarity is about. Just on a personal note, Vinny mentioned about myself stepping down. I stepped down as TDU national organizer. I'm passing the baton to younger people, which is most appropriate, and I couldn't imagine a better time to do it. I'm not stepping out. I'm not going to step out of the movement until I'm not vertical anymore. But I have stepped down, and I'm happy about that, and I couldn't be happier for the people who are stepping forward, and I couldn't be happier for the people who are taking leadership in the union. We see it as an enormous step forward, but as Fred said, there's a lot of work to do now. It's like opening a door. We need to push through that door. We need a movement of people that say our union, not the union, and we're a long way from that. We need more leaders coming up from below. The problem in the labor movement isn't just, well, we have some bad leaders. We don't have nearly enough leaders. We need more ordinary people seeing themselves being leaders. That's our job in TDU. That's what we see in the future, what we're going to do. If the international union's holding the contract campaign, we're going to be there. But we're going to get people involved, educated, informed, taking leadership at the local level. And a lot more of our locals need change. A friend of mine couldn't be here tonight. He had a problem in his home. I just want to recognize him. Walter Taylor, some of you know him. He's been struggling for a long time, Local 814. Their motto is, we move New York to the movers. He takes office after fighting for many, many years, not only against the employers, but his own union officials. He becomes the president on January 1 of Local 814. And now there's a few members of Local 804 here. And then he talked about it. I want to give a number. 96% of Local 804 voters voted for the Teamsters United States. Campaign in New Jersey, Delaware, all right. Philadelphia.
All right.
Where else? Maryland, D.C., Virginia.
Atlanta.
Every local.
New Jersey.
Every local they campaigned in was won by Teamsters United. They campaigned in Baltimore. The head of the Baltimore local is the parcel director of the Teamsters. He negotiated the UPS contract he lost in his own local after these guys went out there and did it. And Some of the members of 804 here have started reaching out to Amazon workers. People keep telling me, you guys going to organize Amazon?
And, probably not in the next, you know, before New Year's.
They have started reaching out and doing the pre-work that needs to be done in organizing. We're not going to be able to organize Amazon until we have an army of organized, of volunteer organizers. And the best place to get them is out of UPS, and the best place to get them from UPS is to show that you're going to take on UPS and you're going to win for the workers. You're going to eliminate two-tier for the drivers. You're going to raise the part-time wages above the minimum wage. The minimum wage in California is higher than the contract wage for part-time workers starting at UPS. That's the biggest state in the United States. That's embarrassing. That's not going to stand. So those things have to change. And we do believe that in the long run, if we're going to survive as a labor movement, we have to be able to beat a company like Amazon, in particular Amazon, in the long run. I want to recognize some people that in TDU we work with other people. We learn from them. We share. We spread some solidarity around. I've been working closely with some members of my second favorite union, United Automobile Workers of America, which was at one time was the most progressive dynamic union in the United States. Today, their last two presidents are visiting prisons, and they're along with the HR people from Chrysler Corporation that were paying them off. That's a disgrace. They disgraced the entire labor movement. They signed two-tier agreements with every corporation they could, from Volvo to John Deere to Chrysler to Ford to General Motors. Yesterday, the votes were counted. Nationwide vote in the auto workers. They had a referendum, and they voted by 64% to change to a one-member, one-vote system. The biggest votes came from the plants, the production workers that have seen the two-tier agreement. And solidarity isn't, it's not just the lower-tier workers that are voting against it. The top-tier workers are voting against it. They know the damage that this is doing to the labor movement. Fred mentioned that the strikes at Kellogg and the Vesco and Deere and Volvo Mack trucks, mostly they've been against two-tier agreements. People are sick of it. They're standing up. And we know corporate greed obviously has the upper hand now in this country. But we believe there is a fight back. We believe we can be part of it, an important part of it. The Teamsters can be in the leadership of a fight back in this country that involves every union and working people that aren't in unions. And that's what we're about. We're going to try to do our share to make it happen. Thanks very much.
We're here with Ken Paff. You are a legend. You are a legend. You've been fighting for democracy for decades, and you reference my union, the UAW, where my presidents are now doing some, or should be doing some time. But so really, what does this victory mean after these decades of fighting for union democracy and still the issue of union democracy for really building a strong working class?
Well, I think the relationship is you've got to involve members to build a fighting, strong labor movement to where they're saying our union, not the union. If you look at the history of labor, when unions have grown is when there is more membership involvement and even more turmoil in the unions. Too many labor leaders say, if I don't get any grievances and no one comes to the hall, that means all the members are happy. It means all the members are passive. And we're not going to grow, we're not going to build, and corporations are going to continue to kick us in the ass. And the way solidarity can beat corporate greed is with a lot more member mobilization, involvement, empowerment, more leaders coming up from below. That's our mantra in TDU. You mentioned the UAW, and I'm very happy for the vote this week. It didn't change the leadership, but it said to the leadership, we want to have the right to vote because you've been signing two-tier agreements.
And in the and it was 64%, which is a heavy margin. But in the automotive production plants, I went down the locals, it was 70% and 80% of the workers are saying, we want to directly elect international officers because they're selling us out. They're signing two-tier agreements. They're unable to organize. They can't organize a whorehouse with a pocket full of $100 bills. And they're, you know, they really want to change. And as was said by other speakers tonight, we're seeing some upsurge in the labor movement. It's still small. Corporations are still winning. I live in California, which has more billionaires than anywhere else on earth, and I think we have more homeless, too. And there's something really, really wrong with that picture. And it's going to take a lot of a powerful movement to confront the power of the billionaires in this country and in the world. And so we want to be part of that. The Teamsters are the logistics union in the United States. They're in growth industries. It's not like a steel union, which is automated and recycled out of existence practically. There are more truck drivers, warehouse, where none of it can be offshored. You cannot deliver groceries in New York with a warehouse in Taiwan, and you can't deliver UPS parcels in New York with a truck driver in Thailand. And so these are industries that are here to stay. They're profitable. Waste, recycle. The Teamsters are big in rail as well. 99% of the rail locomotives in the United States are actually in the Teamsters. It's a heavily unionized industry, but it's divided up in different unions and crafts, and that needs to change. There's a lot of change needed beyond the election in the Teamsters. We want to do our part in the Teamsters and be part of an upsurge in the labor movement.
Now, Teamsters for a Democratic Union, which you came out of, you supported the Teamsters United. But tell us a little bit about Teamsters for a Democratic Union.
Teamsters for a Democratic Union, we are the insurgent reform movement. We don't call ourselves a caucus. We call ourselves a movement because that's our thrust. It's our emphasis. We are a caucus, obviously, by definition. And, yes, we supported Teamsters United. We were part of a broader coalition of forces that came together, some of whom have been with HAFA and some of whom were with the insurgent TDU movement. A lot of this came out of rejection of sellout contracts, two-tier agreements, contracts in the trucking field, in car haul, in the freight industry, which is industrial trucking, and a United Parcel Service, which is the largest labor contract in the United States with 350,000 members. So TDU is about empowering workers, transforming our locals, developing more leaders, developing a more diverse leadership in the entire labor movement, drawing more black, brown, and leaders in, more women leaders into leadership in the labor movement, and putting the rank and file in the driver's seat. Many of the unions in the United States don't do that. That's a matter of fact. Their thrust is not to involve the rank and file. They might want to mobilize them for a march or to vote for Joe Biden. All that is fine, but it's much too minimal. It turns the members into consumers, and they become alienated from the union. They see the only thing the union told them to do was to vote for Joe Biden. Many of them don't even like Joe Biden. So how are you going to convince them politically when you haven't convinced them to be involved in their own union? And that's what TDU is about.
How did you convince TDU to get involved with O'Brien, who, of course, was linked with HAFA all these years? I mean, what made the critical edge for you to decide to support this administration?
That's a good question. 5 years ago, there's an election every 5 years in the Teamsters. We do have the right to vote. It's critical. In 2016, we had allied with Fred Zuckerman. He had previously been an appointee of President HAFA, but he had broken with HAFA, and especially over contracts and militancy and supporting strikes and supporting members. As he said here tonight, when the members want to fight, we're going to be with them, and we're going to help lead them. So he made that break. We started working with him on those issues. Then we supported him for president in 2016. Then that process expanded with Sean O'Brien. This time, the same process. He supported the vote no movement in the contracts. He supported the rejection of the United Parcel Service two-tier contract in 2018. The majority voted against it, but they imposed it anyway. They used a loophole in the Teamster Constitution, which fortunately we got changed this year, but it allowed them to impose a minority contract if less than half of the people had voted, and slightly less than half had voted. So Sean O'Brien was working with Fred and was working with TDU, and we began to explore the possibility of a coalition. In 2019, Sean O'Brien came to the TDU convention. He was questioned. There was a lot of discussion. We voted overwhelmingly to join in the Teamsters United coalition. And that's how that came about with participation. It is a broad coalition. There's no doubt about it. But that's what enabled an overwhelming two-thirds, 66.6% vote, which surprised a lot of people, including me. That was a higher vote than I expected. And it was across the board. I mean, 50 states, I think they won three or something, and those were small. So it was across the board. It was a unifying election in that way, a rejection of the Hoffa administration, the Hoffa direction, and the collaboration with employers. Where it goes from here, though, is wide open.
And one of the goals that Teamster United and Teamsters for Democratic Union have is to take on Amazon, the Amazon drivers, empower them. How will that be done?
That's a big question, and how it'll be done is open, and it certainly isn't going to happen short term. There are small organizing efforts now. I think they need to be nurtured. There needs to be a national program. I think the Teamsters need to take the lead. The Teamsters is the logistics union, but all the labor movement needs to get involved, all the unions. And we need to draw in community groups, political leaders that are supportive. And one of the things that Sean O'Brien said at the TDU convention is, we have to show we can win. You got to win at UPS. I live in Richmond, California. There's a UPS hub a couple miles from my house. There are 2,000 Teamsters there. There's a fence in between it and a big Amazon hub with a comparable number of workers. That's typical because warehouses are located in warehouse areas. We got to have UPS workers that are proud of the union, that think, see it as a fighting union, that's won a good contract for them, and that are going to go over the fence next door, be willing to join as volunteer organizers to help organize Amazon. So that's one of the things. It's obviously not the only thing, but it's something that needs to happen. And I do see it. It's going to be long-term. Anyone who thinks you're going to call an NLRB vote this year, not going to happen. At this point, in Birmingham, Amazon, but what was their number one argument? What can the union do for you? We pay you. We set the wage. What are they going to do? They play on the fact that the union can't win anything from them. We have to show we can win. We have to go, oh, yeah, we can win. We'll kick their butt and have it be credible.
Well, let me ask you this. So that the issue of winning economic strikes, we've seen Nabisco. We've seen the coal miners out there. We see Kellogg cereal division that's been out there for weeks and weeks and weeks in 15 degree weather, etc. So how does the labor movement, looking at a broader picture, begin to really win economic strikes? And where do you see building a greater consciousness in the culture, which is so demeaning to working people and so demeaning to unions?
Well, that's a question for the Teamsters, the whole labor movement, and beyond. And that is a longer-term challenge. I would challenge the fact that economic strikes haven't won. They want big gains at Deere by rejecting the contract and going on strike. They won gains at Volvo Trucks. They won gains at Nabisco. Now, not always. But keep in mind, when you're taking on, like, United Parcel Service, an extremely profitable corporation, or John Deere, $6 billion profit, you're in a strong position in bargaining. And most especially in the Teamsters, industries that cannot be offshored. Every time a company goes on strike, we're going to move the plant to Mexico. You're not going to move UPS to Mexico. It'll be too hard to deliver in Manhattan from Mexico. It's a long drive. So they're not moving. We're not moving the logistics industry. And that's why it's a critical industry to help take a lead and start to build solidarity. And the Teamsters traditionally have a good tradition of supporting the strikes, and we need to build on that, strengthen it, and be the center of solidarity. You're on strike. We're not delivering. We'll be there with you. We'll stand shoulder to shoulder. So I think that's important.
Do you think it's strategic to build community relations, community labor relations to work together in order to deal with the issue of diversity, the human rights and civil rights issues that have been raised by Black Lives Matter and other groups, to really create that kind of full court press of working people who create all the wealth, all the value?
It's important, I agree, because what's the first thing people say when they go on strike? Well, they have a pension plan. You don't. Why should you support them? This is especially used against public workers. They got something you don't have. They play on this, and we have to be supporting the community, supporting broad popular issues. When the labor movement takes on broad popular issues, they do better than when they take on something that looks like, well, that's just a union issue. And that, we see that even on the simplest things, like every time there's something on the ballot to raise the minimum wage, it passes, even in Arkansas. Trump can carry 70% of the vote in Arkansas, but people will vote to raise the minimum wage. So just basic things like that and building on that, but you're absolutely right. Listen, I got to leave you.
Kent Taft, thank you.
My pleasure.
Antoine Andrews, and I want him to tell us what he does with UPS and how long he's worked there.
I've been working with UPS for 25 plus years. I'm also a union representative, shop steward. I've been a shop steward for 11 plus years as well, and I'm a delivery package car driver, servicing the customers in Brooklyn, New York.
There's two things that come to mind. I mean, a lot of people have been very cynical about the Teamsters as a whole.
Right.
And certainly the Mr. O'Brien, who's just won, came from the Hoffa slate. And there are lots of issues about corruption and fighting for union democracy. So why the great enthusiasm at this time? What do you think is different? And what kind of democracy do you think will be established with this administration?
First of all, being in the union, to me, is security, is protection for not only my future, but the future of my family and the future of every member and every family. I understand that people would be a little cynical when it comes to people in general and also the union. I think a lot of it is because of brainwashing, a lack of education, but I am totally confident in Mr. O'Brien, along with individuals on that team, Vinny Perrone, Juan Campos out of Chicago 705. I've seen and I've witnessed, especially my president, Vinny Perrone, stand up and fight head on the company for the betterment of every member and every rank and file member, not only in Local 804, which is my local, but throughout the country.
What would you like to see come out of this victory for Teamsters United that would help not only Teamsters throughout the country, but Teamsters in New York and also those working for UPS?
Yeah, so what I would like to see come out of this victory of Teamsters United is more organizing, more unity amongst the members, and mostly the education. I think way too often people in power and leadership positions fail to educate the rank and file members. And because of that failure, there is a huge level of apathy, and members don't get involved. So I would like to see more education come out of this, more organizing, and more unity amongst the members.
Now, one of the things that was mentioned, a lot of us have our eyes on the prize of Amazon and cracking that nut wide open. And you can say, I'm talking about Jeff Bezos, or I'm talking about the issue.
Right.
But in any event, the issue of organizing, it would seem to me at this point, has been pointed out that we need a good deal more volunteer organizers, not just professional staff people. There needs to be community labor alliances. And certainly another issue in organizing has been the division around the question of race. And so I'm wondering what you think about these issues, particularly as a man of African ancestry, the issue of race, and what's going to really create that organizing drive, that incentive, that push that labor doesn't seem to have had for these past two decades.
I hope that I'm not sounding redundant, but to answer your question from my heart, I believe it's education, encouraging the members to get involved. I have to say that today was a very long day for me. My president, Vinnie Perrone, invited me to attend a panel. It's like a mock panel where they give different scenarios. You have five panelists, and they go through different scenarios of what could take place on a work site. And, you know, that was very educational for me because, you know, being a shop steward for 11-plus years, some of the things that was mentioned today at this convention was mind-blowing. So I would now utilize that information to take back to, you know, utilize it on the shop floor. And that there is building, and that there is protecting the membership. So I would like to see more involvement. And one thing I must say with this recent election with the Oslate is that there is more involvement. I mean, when you look at the last election that took place about five years ago, there was a very low turnout. So we're climbing the mountain slowly but surely, and we're getting more members to get involved, to be involved and to vote, and giving them that knowledge of what they need to participate. That's what it is. We have a very low level of participation. So I'd like to see more involvement coming out of this.
And what about helping other labor unions in their struggles when they're on the picket line? And hopefully they reciprocate.
Well, certainly. I mean, as I mentioned in my speech, when we unite, we win. So it's not only about Teamsters. There's other organizations that I've actually participated in myself when they face crisis on their work site. So it's all about building and staying united.
You mentioned a moment ago community labor alliances. Can you see working with Black Lives Matter and groups that are fighting for human rights and civil rights as well for a real full court press, double teaming for the working class and the rights of our Teamster siblings?
Yes, yeah, so this is something that took place over a year ago. We had a day of action in front of the facility that I work at. There was amid the whole Black Lives Matter movement about a year ago, they came down to our facility and we gave speeches and, you know, in regards to the inequity and the racial disparity that is taking place in this country. And we made it loud and clear to the company that we stand as one. So if they dare think of, you know, practicing unfair labor practices and inequity, we will stand up and we will be there to face them head on.
And do you think, since people have mentioned one of the major problems in all the unions now are employers trying to create a two-tier system, talk to us about why that has to be something that is fought against and fought hard.
A two-tier system is an unfair labor practice, okay? And it's not a practice of equality. It's not a practice of fairness because, you know, coming up in the rank and files, I fought and I worked hard to be where I am today. So for the company to create this two-tier system is an unfairness for these individuals coming in now and also the unborn. So that is something that we are definitely working on to eradicate.
Well, I thank you very much, and I see a long, glorious career for you, both as MC and, most importantly, more importantly, as a major labor leader in a democratic union fighting for the interests of the working class. So thank you so much for what you do and the work that you do.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Great.
You've been listening to the legendary Ken Paff, rank and file, the union democracy advocate with Teamsters for a Democratic Union. Fred Zuckerman, newly elected vice president of the Teamsters Union, and UPS worker and local 804 shop steward, Antoine Andrews.
This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
educate, agitate, and organize for the empowerment of we the people, for another world is possible.
Come on, neighbors, let's get wise.
So, the plaster is falling, the paint is peeling, the plumbing is leaking, the heat and hot water keep cutting off, the elevator keeps breaking down, and the landlord won't return your calls, but the rent keeps going up and up and up?
Find out what you can do about it. Tune in to Housing Notebook, Mondays at 8 p.m.
Hi, this is Doug Wood from Green Street, heard every Tuesday morning here on WBAI. At most radio stations, the focus is on advertising, ratings, and profits. Here at WBAI, the focus is on people and issues. We don't have advertisers, and while that provides us with editorial freedom, it also means we depend on your financial support to stay on the air. Please join Patty and